In 2007, the Babylon podcast was our last best hope for more Lost Tales. We thought it failed. But after WonderCon, it became something more. Our last best hope for more Lost Tales geeking. The year is 2008. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast. And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
Ho, ho, ho! Happy Hanukkah and Merry Christmas. Yeah, Koshmas. And it's Jeffrey at Farpoint Studios, Los Angeles. And in Atlanta?
I'm Brad.
No, not Atlanta. Where are you?
Brad? I am in Louisville.
There you go. So sorry, I meant no insult by that.
But you're in Kentucky Derby territory.
Yeah. The only state can take a 2-minute horse race and turn it into a 3-week party.
Hey, I grew up near Baltimore. The Preakness, my friend, the Preakness.
Last show of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Let's reflect. Let's go back on this year.
Okay.
What was the first show of the year, Brad? You put them all together for us. let's make this like a walk down Brad's memory lane.
He doesn't remember.
He's blocking out. It's the pain of the memories.
Mm-hmm. But Jeffrey, you haven't been here for a while. We missed our chance to gloat.
To gloat?
Yeah, both you and I called the series.
Oh, yeah, the baseball series. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That turned out good. That's good. We'll have to have a more engaging, we'll turn it into the Baseball Babylon Podcast next year. I'll do more shows from the Dodger Stadium. Yeah, exactly.
Without the organ. Music.
That's the best part. We have some rights clearance issues there, but it is the best part.
So this is our wind up for 2008.
And is Brad going to go ahead? I'm going to put him on the spot. Is Brad going to go ahead and try to help us with putting together a best of reel for 2008 if we come up with some suggestions?
I'm working on that, actually. I'm going through the old shows and starting to mark down bits and segments that I think are the least painful memories that we can dredge up.
Mostly it's going to our highlight reel for this year will probably just be Gary all the time, right? Best of Gary.
It's strange Gary that you show. Say that because, yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be the Gary Holiday special, starring Gary.
Oh, absolutely. The year before that, it was the Yarstow special. And, you know, it's because, frankly, suck. Those guys are brilliant. So they're saving our show.
Can I put my vote in now for the Star Wars Christmas special instead?
No.
That's a tough call, Mike. Which one's worse?
It's a toss-up. We love you, Gary.
So the highlight reel would just be the Buki tags and Gary.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, all Gary, all the time.
All the time.
That was fun. What did we do this year? I don't remember a thing.
I'm drawing
another sign of age.
Let's see. We had, I think we had a Claudia posting from a con from Gary that Gary recorded.
We had the big announcement from Joe.
Yeah.
About, I don't want to play this game anymore. I'm taking my ball and going home.
Mm-hmm.
League of Non-Aligned Knitters.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
That right there is the entire highlight show.
How sad is that? All right. I gotta adjust the mic here. Hold on, Michael.
Oh, you know what I just realized?
What?
You moved. Where's the duck?
Where's the duck?
Yeah, the duck.
Right? Oh, the duck. Oh, where's the duck?
The duck.
The duck. The duck is no longer with us.
Aw.
The duck.
Thanksgiving came around.
He was the duck and turducken.
Yes. KFC made me an offer I couldn't refuse. Yeah.
What no, really was duck season?
Duck has gone to the big sky.
Oh, poor duck.
Yeah. We try not to bring that up because my dad actually gave me the duck from his ranch. And yeah, that's a sore point. We don't bring that up, especially at the holidays.
I got nothing.
The poor duck didn't have a spider to save his life, obviously.
All right, so the duck story, that doesn't work for 2008.
Nope.
I think I was pretty much the lamest guy on the team here because did I bring any interviews in this year?
A couple.
Yeah, you did.
Who? Yeah, huh? I rest my case.
I have to go back and check my notes. My memory is about as feeble as Brad claims his is these days. So,
the best part
I claim
this,
lack of sleep.
Yeah, I can tell already. The best part about this episode is going to be that we're going to generate so much listener voicemail that's going to come in because they're just going to be helping us. Going, well, okay, you guys. First off, you did this, then you did that. Don't remember this.
That's why we have listeners who keep track of all that stuff.
There you go. Yeah. Exactly. And like literally right now, I bet Gary and several others are hitting the voicemail speed dial button that they have on their cell phones going, don't you remember?
Well, do you have them online? Are they, or do you have the live feed going too?
The live feed is going. They missed us.
I know.
Yeah, they actually did the live feed when we were absent.
Thank God.
Actually, they did the chat room while we were gone. Literally, they showed up in the chat
and just
room.
Chatted.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
That's what Second Life is for.
Right. No, these it's all text.
Well, yeah, but Second Life too.
This is true.
So,
cool new look to Second Life too.
Absolutely, lots of new things happening in there. If you haven't been there for a while, yes. It's time to do that.
I'm told the manor house has been replaced by a governor's palace.
Mm-hmm.
Dude,
it's huge.
It really is. Gigantic.
So do they have any insight for us? I mean, like, can they help us at all, or should we just drink the night away?
They're not helping.
We've got a couple couple voicemails to handle and some email, but we also have deep geeking on the Face of the Enemy.
Yes.
And yet another plea to Jeffrey to get Mike Vahar on for us.
Yes, please.
He directed this episode.
Okay, well,
this is the one where Sheridan is captured after he's been betrayed by Garibaldi.
Yes.
Very, very creepy fight scene in the bar. Very well done. We need to talk to Mike Vahar.
Okay. Definitely.
Can I put him on my Christmas list for you?
I also I left a voicemail again today for Ed Wasser.
Cool.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. Brian.
So we're going to have some cool interviews come January, right?
Yep. And I've also been in contact with a couple people who are doing some fan work, which I think will be very interesting to talk to. But we'll save those for the new year.
Yeah. And that one guy with the book, too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm curious to hear that story. Yes, sci-fi reference books are near and dear to my heart.
Yes. Well, why don't we take a break?
Yes.
And then come up with some deep geeking.
On the next Babylon 5.
You got your dad, John. If you don't surrender, you're going to kill him.
As Garibaldi pulled Sheridan into his trap.
This is much, much bigger than you suspect.
He discovers that he has helped to unleash the nightmare that could bring humanity to its knees.
Not that you had much choice.
Walter Koenig is back with a vengeance on the next Babylon 5.
The following is brought to you by BuffyBetweenTheLines.com.
Gee, Warren, what do you want to do tonight? Same thing we do every night, Andrew. Dress up and reenact scenes from Star Wars?
that and try and take over the world.
And argue over who's the best Bond.
Dalton!
Buffy Between the Lines, www.buffybetweenthelines.com.
Digging down into the most obscure facts in fandom, this is BE.
And we're back with some serious geeking on what is tonight's episode, Brad? Do you remember what episode we're geeking on?
If I'm not mistaken, believe the face of the enemy.
The face of the enemy. Yes! What a great, probably the best episode ever on television. What was your favorite part?
The beginning.
Yeah. I'm kind of a middle guy because the end wasn't so hot.
Well, this
concludes our deep geeking for tonight. Thank you very much. Let's get back to some emails. And see, that's the way it should happen.
All right.
Tim and Short and blah, sweet. Blah, 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 blah. Exactly. Did you like the episode? Yeah. Do you remember it? No, but I like it. Okay, good. We're in. Done. All right. Moving on.
Let's grab a drink.
Okay. See you at the bar.
And this is what happens when we let the boys loose on their own.
But you know what? I think Jeffrey's got a point. I'm not sure what it is.
Now see, if we had done a truly abbreviated Cliff Notes deep geeking, there would be riots in the streets.
Well, that's what Jeffrey and Brad provided for us.
Mm-hmm.
Would be brief geeking.
Be brief geeking.
Yeah.
Brief geeking, exactly.
Right. I mean, think about it. You would have Gary and several others going into, you know, seizures because there's nothing to call the voicemail line about.
Or, wait, I could do things like Brad and I could do. Wait, here we go, Brad. Let's try this. Oh, Brad, do you remember that thing that Sheridan did?
Yeah.
And then remember that thing with the spaceship? Oh, but when it almost brought me to tears, that one part.
And where what's her name did the thing?
She's got nice ones. Holy cow. Okay, so now for our international audience, Brad and I will do the same thing in Japanese. He's taking his time to translate.
Oh, I was waiting for the subtitles to come up.
Non desu ka? Kore desu ka? Sylvania beat Sony again?
Yeah, you guys probably want to make sure you stick around during 2009 and don't let Brad and I do a show together.
Yes. Actually, you know what? I think we should set aside a special feedback episode where it's just, you know, Jeff and Brad. What do you think?
That we call in and do our own feedback?
No. You answer the feedback.
We could have some Shatner moments. I'm just warning you.
I'm sure. Hey, Shatner's Raw Nerve. I actually caught an episode of that. That's kind of funny. His new show. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Laughing with him or at him?
Oh.
No, laughing with him.
I didn't know anything about that.
Yeah, it's a show on Biography Channel. He sits down with half an hour with different people.
Oh, I've seen that. Yeah. I saw him with Nimoy, and it was great.
Yeah, last week he was with, what's his name, Tim Allen. And apparently next week he's sitting down with Jenna Jameson.
Captain Kirk and a porn star, that could be interesting.
I'll watch that one.
Anyway, we should really deep geek before we lose everybody, huh?
Yeah, you think?
Okay, Tim, bring us in.
Okay. You remember that scene where What's-Her-Face did that thing?
Yeah. To start a trend.
Good thing this is the last one for the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it might be the last one ever. No, The Face of the Enemy. Fantastic episode. And now, see here, I'm going to rise to the challenge. Jeffrey thinks he can outgeek me. Wrong again, Jeffrey. I would say this is arguably the most cinematic episode that has ever been done on Babylon 5.
The Mike Behar. look.
Yes.
He loves to move the camera a lot. He's always got elements in the foreground that are passing just in front of the lens. He loves candlelight. He loves to great eye. And he knows how to relay what he's picturing in his head to the director of photography. And they did a great job. John Flynn and Mike Behar really enjoyed working together. They did a great job on all of Behar's episodes.
Well, this one, one of the elements that
I should get him as a guest, huh?
What's that?
I should get him as a guest, huh?
Yeah, it would be a great idea if you could.
I can't imagine. Yeah,
put it on your list. I'm thinking specifically of that scene where Sheridan meets Garibaldi in the club on Mars, and Garibaldi hits him with a trank, and then Sheridan trying to fight his way out, and he gets the strobe effect going. So, it underscores the brutality of the event in a very artistic manner, and with the strobe going, you get these sharp relief images of Sheridan's bloody face, and then Garibaldi, close-ups of him and looking away, and it was just really intense and very effective.
Mm-hmm. And just the description of it in volume 10 in the script book, he relays it saying, yes, the scene was once described to me as being something similar to a pack of hyenas taking down a lion.
Yes,
and
you do get that sense. You do get that sense in terms of the character that even though he's just been drugged, Sheridan's going to try to fight his way out. Mm-hmm. He's just not going to take it lightly.
Yeah, I mean that's his whole philosophy. Don't start a fight, but finish one. And you see him trying to finish it, and he's just outnumbered physically and. Physically,
and Christopher Franke did an amazing job as well, right? I mean that's what really sets that off as well, because the music is just building and the tension is getting tighter and tighter,
and it was a different type of music,
as I recall. It was, it's been a while, but it was real like fingers on a blackboard kind of.
It was rocking. It started out as like a typical hard rock type song. Playing in the club, and then it made you more and more anxious in combination with the strobe lights and how everything's just jerking back and forth, and it literally builds up the agitation.
Yeah, it is just really intense.
I remember this episode. Isn't this the episode that they do the black and white cutaway shots? It's somewhere in the
where Bester is allowing Garibaldi to remember
what happened to him. Uh-huh.
And he does it all in black and white, and the contrast between the black and white and the regular stock, the regular film, and the regular look and feel is so grainy and edgy. I remember this episode. This was a good episode.
Yeah. It's really intense, and in fact, the only deficiency that I find in the episode, it's actually in the writing, and I think that it comes with all that exposition that you get Bester when he's not only do we get to see what happened to Garibaldi, but Bester's also describing it. And I think it tends to get really wordy, but how it's shot and the way it's edited together it takes it beyond just being that kind of wordy exposition, and it starts becoming very intense that way. And believe it or not, I think that Jerry Doyle's performance in that, all he has to do is sit there and like stare into the distance, but the way he's doing it,
mm-hmm.
Cut against, the torture that he went through and the memory of what's happened and how he's been manipulated. It really works. It ends up working. And I think that's a case where the director makes the episode really come to life.
Mm-hmm. And I will disagree with you a little bit. I didn't think the part where Bester is explaining to Garibaldi and to us everything that happened. I mean, we had most of the pieces. We just didn't know why. We didn't know why the shadows picked him up. We didn't know how Bester redirected him away from the shadows. We didn't know what the intent was. And I saw that part as, you know, Bester's words, him telling the story, was leading Garibaldi to the lost and missing pieces of his memory, basically like breadcrumbs down a path. And that way he finally realizes what was done to him as his awareness comes back to him after Bester's left. We're sitting there going, holy cow, there was more levels to that than I thought. And he's realizing what has been, you know, how his life has been turned upside down just to make him a pawn in a game that he never wanted to be a part of in the first place. And the despair on his face in that first scream when he puts his hands to his face, that's visceral.
Right. And I agree with you there. I agree with you there. Yeah. Well, and just before that scene opens, all right, just as the scene opens, when Garibaldi's just sitting there in the transport tube, and Lise comes on board and starts saying, oh, you know, I knew William was up to something, but I didn't know how deep it was. This is really horrible, and what are we going to do about it? He's just like, you need to leave.
And I have a question about that. Was that him saying it, or was that Bester making him say it? Because by that time, he's in catatonic state. He is
right. Oh, it's the implanted personality telling her that. Yeah.
But see, I thought the implanted personality went into autopilot. It was just shut down. He's just sitting there waiting for new instructions from Bester. So did Bester, you know, telepathically tell him to say that, or was that part of his programming still?
I think that's part of the program.
I don't know. I have my doubts.
Yeah. No, I think that was the programming. You know, something else that struck me as well, and this gets back to something you had said, Summer, in our previous Deep Geeking on exercises of vital powers. And in that, you mentioned how you were struck by Garibaldi's line about, I hope he forgives me for what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And you're thinking, you know, maybe that's Garibaldi talking about himself. And it was reinforced for me, that observation, at the beginning where Eggers is talking with Garibaldi, and Eggers says, okay, you know, you're going to deliver Sheridan to us, and, you know, one day maybe he'll appreciate what you've done. Mm-hmm. And Garibaldi says, yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
You know, so that part of him recognizes, no, that Sheridan probably won't ever forgive him for that.
Mm-hmm. It was like, yeah, you keep rationalizing that. If that helps you sleep at night, you keep going. You're right. Go right on ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. And I loved his next line. I think the last guy who had this job got 30 pieces
of silver. And what was great about that scene was he walks out after saying it, and it takes Edgar's a beat to look over and kind of realize what he says. Oh, you're sassing me, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah. The episode is full of such weight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the opening battle where Sheridan's forces are fighting the Earth Force cruisers.
Mm-hmm. The realization, the revelation from the one Earth Force captain, you know, it's like, you know, we're not going to surrender. We're going to go down fighting because you're going to kill us anyway and replace us with the Minbari crew. That just shows the depth and the breadth of the propaganda against them, where they think that their own, you know, other humans are going to kill them and replace them with alien crew members. And you see the incredulousness on Sheridan's face. He's going, what? Is that what you've been told?
Yeah. Yeah. And his, you know, and again, he's, you know, he's like, they got to stand down. They got to surrender. Why are they still fighting? Now, they're outnumbered, and it's that, you know, Ivanova says in the voiceover, you know, this is the hard one. We got to fight ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Sheridan's dilemma right there. He has to fight to liberate Earth, but, you know, even when the odds are against his, nominal opponent. He's like, I don't want to continue fighting if I don't have to. Why don't they see that they don't have to keep fighting?
Yeah, and you know, so that's one of the things, the propaganda that's been spread.
Yeah.
You know, is it part of the propaganda against the resistance campaign that's been spread on Earth? Or were those directly given to the ship captains because they didn't want any more ships going over to Sheridan's side without firing a shot?
I'm not sure it really matters. I think the effect is the same.
Hmm.
Yep.
And you get that one moment of joy when the Agamemnon catches up with them.
Right.
You know, just brief respite of, you know, first there's confusion from the people not surrendering, and then relief that they're going to stand down now that they know the truth. And then apprehension that, okay, this is my old ship, my old shipmates, a ship I love. Are they coming here to throw down? And then just
right.
Complete joy when he realizes they're there to help.
Yeah. It is very short-lived, because at that point we get Garibaldi's call, or Sheridan gets Garibaldi's call that they've captured his father.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Garibaldi says, I know... You know, he even uses his first name. Like, John, I know we're not, and you know, a lot of stuff's gone on between us, but, you know, we got to get your dad out. And almost shades of In the Shadow of Zaha Doom, everybody is telling him, don't go. This smells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd never.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I'd never made that parallel before, but yeah, it's like the one thing he knows he has to do, everybody else is telling him not to do, and he's literally about to do it again.
Right. Yeah.
The one thing I do remember from this episode, and the thing that still strikes me, is that I give Straczynski props for trying to do this on commercial television. But there were a couple points in there, and I don't fault him for this, because it's the nature of, you know, segmented television, where you have to take you only have so much time to tell a story before break, and then you have to take your break, and then you got to come back and do the story some more. There were a couple points in there where it really needed to go longer. The conflict and the thing that was happening in there, it got resolved a little too fast for me.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying there, Mike. You know, there's the bit with Eggers and Garibaldi where Eggers mm-hmm. tells Garibaldi, mm-hmm. deliver me Sheridan, and I'll tell you the whole truth.
Exactly, and it's all of a sudden, boom, the resolution happens right there. And it really didn't, because if it was real life and these were real people, it'd take longer to come to that realization and come to that conclusion.
This is part of the problem with them having to compress everything for season 4 mm-hmm. because they didn't know they were going to have a season 5 yet.
Right.
Because I could easily see everything that happened in this episode spread out over the 2, maybe even 2.5 episodes. Especially.
Yeah, on the other hand, though, I think while it compresses things, I think in just in terms of the general mood, especially for this episode, the tension is just so intense, and it's everywhere. You know, you've got Garibaldi who's like a humming wire. He's so wound. You know, okay, I delivered Sheridan. Tell me what's going on. And you just see him almost vibrate with the anguish or the energy, you know, that he's got going on. Okay, and then we learn, well, here's what Eggers is doing. And even he reveals a certain level of emotional. I mean, every other time we've seen him up to this point, he's cool and calm and collected and very measured. And then he has that one line where he says, you know, I started Edgar Industries to help people, but I'm not going to be a slave to the telepaths.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get that depth of emotion. And then maybe he just kind of stops and composes himself.
Yeah.
There's the interchange between Lita and Steven in number 1. when they show up with the cryo units with the telepaths. And number one is just royally pissed, like nobody's business. And all the little, you know, there's that scene at dinner where they're sitting there, the three of them with Lita and number one and Franklin. You know, they give her dinner. They basically just throw the plate down in front of Lita.
Mm-hmm.
And poor Franklin, well, what's going on? Why don't you ask her?
Yeah.
I got to go figure out what to do with cryo units full of peeps. It's like.
Yeah, that whole. That whole interchange was just all tension, or like Lita sitting back there trying to go, I know why she's pissed, and I really can't say that I blame her. And Steven is offended because this, you know, number one, his, you know, girl of the week, is currently pissed off at someone he considers a friend and a colleague. He's like, dude, what is this?
Right. Yeah. And that's Franklin's character, too. You know, he doesn't think of those terms. He doesn't see Lita as the peep. And, of course, you know, number one and her crew, they have reason to think that way. And, of course, Lita understands that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you get that little aside where she just says, there's going to be a war one day.
Yeah. I like how that's echoed throughout the entire series. Somebody says, someday there's going to be a war between mundanes and teeps, and I hope I'm not alive to see it. Every last one of them says that. But there was,
they know it's gonna be bad.
Yeah, there was a scene, the scene at the beginning where number one actually sees the cryo cargo when she pulls the cover down to actually look at the one. Right before it cuts the scene where she throws the cover back over and the scene kind of goes to black, you see Lita roll her eyes. And I've never seen that before. It's the funniest thing because you see, Steven's there is kind of confused. Number one has that, you know, mask of implacable anger, and Lita's just rolling her eyes going, oh, crap.
Yeah, right. Yeah. How many? A lot.
Yep. It's just a funny, just the this little moment, this little sideshow of humor right in the background of all this, you know, building conflict. She goes, oh, boy.
Right.
That's one of the hallmarks of the show is getting little bits like that in during tense moments like that. There's always little one-liners or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Not so much in this episode. And then, you know, we even get to the scene with Ivanova on the White Star talking with Marcus.
Oh, yeah.
Where they found out that Sheridan's been captured.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, all right, I don't, and of course, Garibaldi at this point, his spell has been broken. And, Marcus says, well, we're getting a message from him. It's like, I don't want to hear anything from him. And if he shows up at Babylon 5, tell him to shoot the son of a bitch on sight.
Yeah. And,
and Marcus's reaction is great. It's like, you can't mean that. And she's like, yeah, hell yeah.
And you see how focused she is on the task at hand. She was told to come out there to replace Sheridan as the commander on the front lines. They have to keep pushing forward because them stopping to regroup is exactly what Sheridan's capture was meant to force them to do. So they're like, hey, we have to keep on moving because winning this thing at this point may be the only way to get him out of there alive.
Yeah. I had this, watching this episode again today in preparation for our deep geeking, I got the same sensation from it when I first saw it, that all the energy and all the tension, the sickening brutality that Sheridan is undergoing at the hands of his captors, and like I said, the intense camera work, which is echoed again, from Sheridan's beating in the club, is echoed again
in the cell, yeah.
PSI Mars business with where they're examining Edgar's room. You know, you get these quick shots of the bodies and the blood and things being bagged up and all that kind of stuff. So there's that thematic quality going through it. And then at the end, where you think the this is going to throw our heroes in disarray. And Marcus says, well, what do we do? And Ivanovich just says, we keep going. You know, and I get the same feeling when I first watch it was, you know, it's the wrath of God,
mm-hmm.
and nothing's going to stop it.
Yeah, this is the immovable force. It's coming. It's bearing down on Earth because it has no other choice. It's moving forward. It's going to keep on going.
Right, and this is something. It's an interesting examination in a sense of. Cult of personality in this way. Sheridan's enemies perceive him because he's charismatic. That's the reason why the people are following him. And if you move him, then the movement falls apart. But the thing is that Sheridan, even though he is charismatic, has never made it about him. He's made it about a higher ideal. And his people who follow him believe in that ideal.
Mm-hmm.
So, it is an intense episode. It really is. A lot happens in it.
Mm. Yeah. So, I have a question for Jeffrey.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Were you on set when Walter did the scenes with Harlan?
Yes, I was. Yeah, I'm just flashing on it. I remember it's a very tight hallway with an entrance. Yeah. Okay. I kind of have the memory in my head. Yeah.
Tell us about that, because those are two very powerful personalities together in a small space. Were there shenanigans?
I got to admit, I don't remember any specifics, but I'm sure, yes, indeed. But the truth is, when Harlan entered, there is no bigger. There's no topping that.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, you've got Walter, a dynamic personality, and a lot of fun to be around, and all that sort of stuff. But man, you bring Harlan into the mix, and truly, like nobody can top that. So it was, as I recall, all Harlan all the time.
I just would have loved to have seen that, because I've seen Walter in person a couple times. I've seen Harlan in person once. He was actually running the charity auction, and the charity auction at the Nebula Awards here in, I think, 2006, and he was offended that people weren't spending more money. And he says, okay, I got something that you guys will spend money on. And he picks up the plate that he was eating his snack off of. He says, here, a sandwich half eaten by Harlan Ellison. What's my opening bid? And people were falling out laughing in the aisle. So I'm like, what do you do? What happens when these two guys get together in a scene? And I want to know. I want to see.
You need to finish that story. How much did he get for the sandwich?
I think $50.
Yeah. He got $50 for a half-eaten sandwich. That's Harlan.
Like I said, sheer force of Harlan's will is formidable.
Absolutely.
But he's funny. I think he's funny. And just, I would have loved to just been there to just watch the two of them together. Because, you know, in between takes, they were like goofing off.
Yeah. You know, but at the same time, they're both, you know, pro. And had a really good time. I'm sure the real fun stuff was happening, like, in the makeup trailer and that sort of thing ahead of time.
Oh, well. I thought I had to ask.
Mm-hmm.
I had to ask, because that's just, that doesn't happen a lot.
No.
Did we hit everything? Telepaths?
I'm trying to think. I think Edgar. We pretty much covered everything. The one little last bit that I want to toss in that, continuing on with the expansiveness of the visual effects that we've noted before in the fourth year, that opening battle takes place around an asteroid, which was a neat little addition to a scene like that. I thought that was pretty cool. And it's a quick scene, quick little shot, but it has always stuck in my mind. The shot of Sheridan in the Thunderbolt entering the Martian atmosphere. It's all of like 3 seconds long. But I think it's like one of the coolest things.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but it just is.
I don't know. The way they shot it, and when it starts to come into the atmosphere and you see the little bits of fire coming off it as it's in entry, it looks like, you know, stardust or something. And it's just a really cool looking effect. And hey, that's neat. Because I think up until now, we've never seen a ship that small entering atmosphere. We've only seen White Star sized ships. And this is tiny compared to a White Star.
Yeah. And in terms of general science fiction movies and images, unless it's been something more factual, say about, NASA space flight, you don't see that. You never see the Millennium Falcon heating on reentry.
That's true.
You know, or X-Wings or anything like that. But, we did with that. So it's pretty cool. All right. What do you think, Summer? Anything else on The Face of the Enemy?
in JMS's notes about this episode, he said, first thing, at the time this script was written, there were no designer viruses tagged to specific genetic traits. Now, apparently such things exist, and I'm not happy about it, so knock it off.
Wait, what does that mean?
I think it was Ray Bradbury who said, I don't write about science fiction to bring about the future. I'm trying to prevent it. Think about it. A genetically coded virus can, in effect, be used as a biological weapon. You know, you can target a specific part of the population. Because the whole part of the virus was it would kill anybody or attach itself to anybody who had the genetic marker for being a telepath. It was airborne. It was 100% infectious. And
completely harmless to normals.
Completely harmless to people who did not carry the telepath marker. That meant even latent telepaths like Susan would have been infected.
Yeah.
And that, I think that goes to showing a little bit of arrogance on Edgar's part, because you don't know who has, you know, how many people are latent telepaths, are just carriers for the telepath gene.
I would say that the arrogance... I don't think that's arrogance. I think from where Eggers stands, that fits into his worldview.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who's potential telepath is a threat. Okay, you know. So in that sense, he's you know.
Well, in that sense, he's
who would have created Vicor. But the guy I'm thinking of is Wade, who almost reminded me of Justin on Zahadoom. He says, you know what? Guess what? This is just evolution. You know, this is Carthage. This is Homo sapiens versus the Neanderthals. Someone with a superior mutation or superior technology wins every time. And we're just leveling the playing field. You know, but that's, you know, that's the counterpoint to Franklin and his, you know, his consternation regarding the way number one is interacting with Lita, who sees Lita simply as a telepath, nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
And Franklin, on the other hand, sees her as the individual, but doesn't want to acknowledge the deeper connections and implications of the fact that she's a telepath.
Right.
You know, those extremes.
Yeah, and my thing is like the extra narrow vision of this virus is actually an echo to the virus that was in Infection. You know, what is pure? I mean, it's very possible to have two mundane parents have a telepathic child, you know, so they have to be carrying the telepathic gene. So they would be potentially infected. So what do you do?
Oh, and there are those who would say, no, 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 you don't understand. All they have to do is come get the antidote every couple of weeks, and they'll be fine.
Mm-hmm. But they're thinking like 2% of the population. What happens if it's really 40? You know, what did you just do to the human race?
Well, again, that's the kind of thing. I mean, from where they're standing, it's two separate races. That's what Wade says. It's Homo sapiens versus Homo superior.
Yep. And for underestimating how such biological weapons can get out of control, I suggest everyone read the first three quarters of the book, The White Plague, by Frank Herbert. The end kind of lost me, but the first three quarters of it's amazing.
I might have to read that. I haven't read that one.
It's rather prophetic.
It's rather scary.
Yeah.
You want me to tell you about it, or shall I save it?
I'll save it.
Okay, we'll save it, because we're gone long. We done?
Yeah. I think I'm done, finally.
Okay. You done, Jeffrey?
I think Brad and I did a much better rendition of Keep Geeking for this episode.
The Reader's Digest version.
The Reader's Digest version.
Well, it pretty much summed it up. I mean,
yeah. It was a great episode. There were things we liked. The chicks were hot. The CG was cool. There was that great scene with the guy and, you know.
And Harlan Ellison is Harlan Ellison.
Harlan is Harlan. Uncle Harlan.
Exactly. That was the funny part. We were talking about that.
Yeah.
Then there was the Japanese, which was the part we didn't understand. So I don't know what, you know, Tim just rambles on and on and on. It's like, come on. We could put so much more fun stuff into these shows.
All right. I promise we'll give you 5 minutes for Vorlon jokes next time, okay?
Yeah.
All right, we are done with Deep Geeking
for
this episode for 2008. So we're going to, because this is a long show, we're going to take a really quick break.
Hello, welcome to Dragon Sushi. Did you order?
Yeah, I'd like 2 tuna rolls and 2 California rolls, and can I get a slice of sci-fi?
Oh, what is slice of sci-fi?
What is slice of sci-fi? Why, it's an award-winning podcast. That's what slice of sci-fi is.
Oh, we know I have slice of sci-fi.
What do you mean you don't have slice of sci-fi?
We know I have Yuko.
But I need my slice of sci-fi.
I give you a slice of sci-fi.
Whoa!
Slice of Sci-Fi can only be found at www.sliceofscifi.com.
And we are back. We have, I guess, the last batch of feedback for 2008.
Yeah, it is. So why don't we go ahead and start tackling this. Mike, run the first voicemail.
Hi, Babylon Podcasters. This is Mark from Mars Colony. I'd like to follow up on the Deep Geeking on Moments of Transition. Seems to me we haven't yet discussed one of the great unresolved mysteries of the whole series. When Delenn is introducing the newly reformed Grey Council, she says, quote, "This place is reserved in memory of Neroon until it is taken by the one who is to come." Any theories as to who this might be? Although on the surface this could foretell Sheridan coming to Minbar as president of ISA, that doesn't work for me. Len seems to be describing someone who will be a great Minbari leader, as Chakot was before the Earth-Minbari War. It's Mars Colony, signing off.
Your second answer is correct, sir.
Yep.
Yep. I don't see any scenario where Sheridan could have been the next leader of the Grey Council. Never going to happen.
No. I think that is... I don't know that Delenn had anyone specific in mind. I would agree with Mark from Mars Colony that it is some yet as to be named great leader on the level of a Dukat. But
right.
I don't think that's a great unresolved mystery. I think that's simply a branching off point for yet another lost tale.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, what my interpretation of that was, we had Dukat, who was the acknowledged great leader. His named successor was going to be Delenn until the war kind of interrupted things. So the assumption was that Delenn would have become a senior member of the Grey Council, then become leader when Dukat passed on, which could have been like another 20 years. And then the war and the shadow war kind of interrupted things. So she took on a new role, a new path. And now with her rebuilding the Grey Council, we just have to wait for the Minbari civilization to heal and come back together. And in its natural progression of time, another great leader will emerge and take them even farther forward. And that's right. Who they're waiting for.
I know who it is.
Uh-huh.
Barbara Streisand. She's got one more concert tour in her, and she's going to be big.
And I was going to say William the Bruce. There you go.
Mm. No, huh?
No.
No, just think about it a little bit. Come on, Tim. You can geek on that for 20 minutes. I'm
yeah,
sure
well,
Barbara
I think,
would be awesome
think,
at it.
Yeah, you drop the Barbara and you get Streisand, which is
there
the
you go.
Name. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. There you go.
Double N at the end of Streisand. And,
or you just sort of spell it like Barbar.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah,
now that just sounds like Babar the elephant.
Right. Or maybe it would be Min Barbara.
So you're saying Barbara Streisand's a Minbari infiltrator? Is that it?
No, I think she's one of the great leaders. I think she was the original, possibly, Minbar. She's not quite human and not quite Minbari, so I think she's sort of like some little...
She did sing that song, Balin, Can You Hear Me?
Oh.
Balin, can you hear me? Nice. Yeah, I'm sure that the chat room can come up with several other titles of Barbara's that were clear indications that her return was imminent.
Please don't get them started. They'll go on for the next hour and a half.
You need the material. Go for it. That's great.
Okay, next.
Hey, Babcasters. This is Gary from Jacksonville. I know you've been wondering how I've been spending my time since there's been 2 weeks without me able to comment on any deep geeking or anything like that. Well, I've been rereading the Technomage trilogy, and without getting into a review of the whole series, I have to say I do like that it runs concurrently with Babylon 5 episodes, so that this way, as you're watching, say, the Technomage is coming back, you're able to see the whole Technomage side of it as well, and actually it does touch on several different episodes, so it's a nice thing to sort of see the behind-the-scenes action that's occurring while an actual episode is occurring. So that's what I was doing. Bring on the deep geeking, guys. My voicemail thumb's itching, and I can't wait to call back and talk about it. Take care. Bye.
You need to get an ointment for that, Garrett.
I am sorry we have caused a disruption in your weekly pattern, Gary. We will try to let you know ahead of time more often when we're taking a break. Oh, by the way, this will be your last show of the year 2008. Just telling you right now. However,
the fresh one.
Yeah, fresh one. However,
yeah, we got warmed over Thanksgiving leftovers coming.
We know now that we can pull in Gary when we start talking about the Technomage novels.
Yes.
Because he's read them more than twice.
Yes. Well, we did. Hmm. We had interviewed Gene Cavellos, although I think that was 2 years ago. And as I've said before, it was the Technomage trilogy that changed my mind about the Technomages in general on the show. And I love what she did with it and how she did, especially in the second book, Summoning Light, where she writes in all the stuff that you don't see that would be going on in the Geometry of Shadows and turns out to be very much plots within plots and some very heartbreaking things.
I just noticed that you said on the show as opposed to the Technomages in real life, Tim. I was just trying to...
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is that I haven't ever met a Technomage in real life, so...
That you know
You've probably got one of those little Technomage bobbleheads on the dashboard of your car, though, don't you? Like St. Christopher, you kind of keep it there to protect you.
Top of the tree, actually. I'm looking at it right now.
Well, you know, that said, I'm glad her novels changed your mind because it saved us from having like 2 weeks of arguments about that. Now, Gary might not be happy with that, but I'm sure a lot of our listeners did not want to hear us argue for 2 weeks about the pros and cons of Technomages.
Well, you know, like I said, it's what she does, what she did with them, transformed them into something deeper and far more tragic than what we just saw in 45 minutes on one episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's miraculous. And here, you know, I go through and I check the email, and so I heard Gary's message, and it gave me a little bit of starting me thinking. So I did a little cross-checking here, because I think this is a final example of what Cavellis did that's really marvelous, amongst everything else. There's the quote that Elric tells Sheridan in the episode written by JMS.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about, you know, what the Technomages are and what they know, and that Sheridan asks, like, what? And Elric says, you know, we know the true secrets, important things. 14 words to make someone fall in love with you forever. The 7 words to make them go without pain. How to say goodbye to a friend who is dying. And he goes on. And it's like, while all that sounds like magic, Cavellos in Summoning Light, and I just went and found this, in her story, the Technomages are trying to pull a fast one over on the Shadows. They're trying to, you know, they're not just clearing out because things are getting bad. They recognize they're on the run from the Shadows. And Elric is talking with Alwyn, who, of course, we met in Crusade.
Mm-hmm.
And Elric has to part Alwyn from Alwyn's apprentice named Carvin, a young lady. And, you know, Elric knows that they've got to part, and he's got to send Alwyn to look after Galen, who's off doing his own thing at the Rim. And this is the paragraph. Elric knew the 7 words to say to make his old friend agree, and he hated himself for saying them. Going to the Rim will be dangerous. There's no, you know, there's no mumbo-jumbo mystical 7 words, mecha-leka-hi, mecha-hi-ni-ho. It's a simple, it's a simple explanation of the situation.
Hmm.
And Elric knows that, you know, nothing good is going to come of it, but he's got to do it anyways. And that, to me, is what makes that Technomage trilogy so amazing.
Okay.
I've got the 7 words. Here's your unlimited American Express card. Enjoy.
No, I think he just said it. Going to the Rim will be dangerous.
That does nothing for me.
Or maybe it's the other way, Mike. Maybe it's your bank was just bought by us.
A little too close to home for me.
I wish you still got home for it to hit close to.
Ooh.
Yeah, that's true. That's
there you go. There you go. Keep it real.
Okay. Next one.
Hey, Babylon Podcast. This is Art Goal of the Geek of All Trades Podcast, and I'm listening to the latest Babcast episode here, and listening to Summer talking about Lego Babylon 5. That would make such an awesome video game. I mean, why not? They got Lego Star Wars, Lego Indiana Jones, Lego Batman, and I learned yesterday that Harry Potter is next in line to get the Lego treatment. I would love to be able to play Lego Babylon 5 on my Xbox. That would just be 30,000 different kinds of awesome. Of course, you know, I'm such a sicko that in my dreams, I really, really want to see a Lego Watchmen. Admit it, you want it too.
Actually, I could live without the Lego Watchmen, but I completely forgot that there were Lego video games. Oh, I was thinking,
Lego
Star
models.
Wars
is fantastic.
You know?
Lego Star Wars is one of the coolest games ever.
I've got pretty much all the Lego games, and they are great. Lego Indiana Jones is hysterical.
Yeah?
And as is Lego Batman and Robin.
Well, to me, there's nothing more I think that sums up the true nature of the Lego Star Wars, of seeing your little Chewbacca character wearing a Stormtrooper helmet on the top of his head. And, you know, the line in Star Wars where Han Solo says that Wookiees will rip your arms off, they actually do that in Lego Star Wars. But it's funny because it's just basically taking apart little Lego guys.
It just seems so fun to me that you can use the word Lego and Xbox in the same sentence. It's like the simplest, most rudimentary toy plaything there is. And then Xbox, certainly one of the more complicated new devices we have.
The Xbox is fantastic. And then Lego Babylon 5, you could go around collecting the little purple and green Lego studs that pop out when you bust everything.
Now, and
since Lego Drazi, that would be cool.
Yeah, and since I have no clue how the Lego games are actually played, I think I would have to play them in order to get the idea of how to make Babylon 5 Lego gameplay and pitch that.
Well, they all use the same game engine. You can tell.
Yeah, and it's basically, you know, going through levels and doing stuff. You know, in terms of gameplay, it's fairly basic.
It's really,
you know,
very good.
I mean, in the Star Wars, you're basically kind of going through various scenarios from the movies. But the charm of it is that it's the little Lego guys, and everything is built out of Legos.
Yeah, and the dialogue's all...
You blow stuff up, it's not explosions, it's like Legos coming apart.
I'm holding out for the Lego Wii.
Okay, we need to sit down and think. How do we get the right people together to get us Lego Babylon 5?
Mm-hmm.
How do we do that?
Well, the Lego games are for the PC. You get someone to hack and skin it.
Oh, there you go.
There are options. We shall have to think about this. We shall have to plot. We shall have to plan our plot to cause trouble.
2009 can just be all about this.
Lego B5.
Well, we made 2008 all about Joe's announcement, so.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, we have great practice in beating the dead horse.
You watch. By the time we get back from a holiday break, somebody will have started a B5, a Lego B5 game on petition online or something.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We should do our own licensing division of the show here and start handing out licenses to all of these people for the B5 podcast. That way it's a property we own. And, okay, and we'll have B5 podcast Lego.
We're not on a space station, so there's no airlock to blow out the Babylon podcast there.
I'm envisioning this game. What is it? Is Jeffrey running around looking for tequila and Tim hanging around and filibustering the entire show? I don't get it.
No. Tim would be wandering the woods looking for a phone.
Yeah. And then at a critical moment of the whole game, when it all comes together, we realize that character Mike hasn't pushed the record button.
Oh crap, I forgot to do that. We got to start over.
I posted a link in chat to a photo I found on Google of somebody built a Lego White Star.
Ooh. No way.
Oh yeah.
I want pictures.
Well, there's a link in chat.
There is. Oh, cool.
Awesome.
I want it.
So what did you get for Christmas this year? A Lego White Star?
Hey, that's actually not pretty. That's not bad.
You can actually go on. I think you can go to the Lego site and you can build things virtually there and they will send you the pieces.
Really? Dude, they are so cool.
Mm. Mm.
So if I send them a, say, 24 inch model of the station, they'll send me the pieces.
You have to build it like in their little virtual thing, I guess.
Right.
And when you do that, you can just, like, from what I understand, I haven't done this myself, but you can send that, what you've built to them in their little virtual thing, and they will send you the pieces to build it in real life.
How much did the pieces cost?
Not a damn clue.
Because I would so try to get in there. I have no graphic skills at all, but I would love to get in there and do like a Star Fury, a Thunderbolt, a station.
Yeah, I was just thinking that very thing.
A shadow vessel. Dude, a Lego shadow capital ship? That'd be so cool.
Can you imagine what a little Lego Kosh would look like?
A little Lego
Kosh.
Yeah,
what I'm thinking is with the current economic state that we're in, mm-hmm. and businesses closing and everybody fighting to keep their... I mean, like, let's just go to GM and see if they'll make us, you know, a real White Star. They got parts left over.
They're retooling anyway right now, so why not?
Yeah.
Yep.
Exactly.
Might as well build starships.
There you go.
Just found a link to Lego... Star Furies. Let's see here.
Ooh.
Google image search is awesome.
It is. Lego Star Furies. Lego Star Furies, Lego White Stars, Lego Shadow Ships. All we need now literally is the video game.
Summer, are we supposed to go ding every time you say Lego?
I hope not.
Or is it ching?
It shouldn't be cha-ching either, because we're driving people to their website to go play with this stuff, so they should be thanking us.
Yeah, they should send us kits. You hear that, Lego people? Yeah. We know you're listening.
I want schematics.
How did that work out with your last plea to Warner Brothers, Tim? Okay.
Well, you know, the people from Lego are responding in the same manner that the people at Warner's have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
because we've proven that we had a lot to do with the great sales that the DVD project came out on, you know, right?
I'll find you that metric.
What's the name of that thing?
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah, what was the name of it? Holy cow, that was just half a year ago. And
the Lost Tales.
Lost Tales, good grief. Yeah, I'm sure that we greatly contributed to Joe's Empire, and here we are with nothing.
We have each other.
Yeah.
Okay. In the chat room, JT from JT Indies Christian mm-hmm. Music Podcast is saying, everyone has to take a drink every time I say Lego.
I'm working at it.
Cool. That one counts.
The B5 drinking game. Play it with your kids.
And at this point, I don't even wait for Lego. I just keep it. Like every time you talk, I just start snapping.
Did I send you guys the email about my spotting Zima in the TV Wild last week? Week before?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was hilarious.
That was the funniest thing. I now know that Stephen Colbert is a huge, huge, just generic sci-fi geek, not just a Star Wars geek. He's a huge sci-fi geek. I want to get him on Slice because that was the funniest thing I ever saw. The fact that he broke out a Zima on the show.
I guarantee you he listens to at least one of these shows. Either this show or Slice
I'm
or something.
I'm quite sure he listens to Slice because there's just been too many things on there that I'm like, dude, absolutely. We just talked about that. You got that off our website.
Absolutely. Either that or he's just visiting the site, which is very possible.
He probably has minions visiting the site. But
maybe he's telepathic.
Either way, Steven, call me. We need to get you on the show. Anyway, you have emails for us, don't you, Tim?
Yeah, I've got an email here. Let me read this one here. This comes to us from Richard in London. He says, "Hi, Babylon Podcast crew and Babylon Scripts crew. I've been a listener since day one, got behind a bit recently, and have just finished catching up. Podcast number 136 finally motivated me to mail you guys. This was where we interviewed Jacqueline Easton and Jan Schroeder. It was especially nice to hear Jacqueline's voice because she personally helped me out with a snafu I had with my order for book number 14. May I say that if every company had her professionalism and attention to customer service, the world would be a much better place. JMS chose his people well. That's it for now. Be seeing you." I thought we'd share that. And I think everybody who's had any sort of dealings with Jacqueline and the crew over there at Synthetic Worlds has had nothing but positive things to say about their experience. Hmm. And that was a fun interview as well.
It was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When do we get to find out about the secret project again?
Next year, soon, I think she said.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you answer her email, Jeffrey?
I did, and I was absolutely stumped.
Okay.
There was just nothing in the memory bank that tied me to what she was talking about or when we had it or what it was. And then on top of that, I just have no access to any resource to, like, you know, try to dig it out or find anything. I mean, all of the old fan club website is long since gone, and what the products that came in there, no recollection of Joe ever posting anything that said he'd have to get it to me. I had nothing.
Oh, well,
it's one of the inherent difficulties of trying to do something with a show that, you know, I haven't been around for more than a decade. Actually, trying to work with me on a show I did last week is sometimes exceeding.
Well, that's it for the feedback.
That's it for feedback.
Yep.
That's it for us then.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow.
The end of 2008. What are you going to do?
Sleep.
I'm going to wait for 2009 to come rolling down the track and squash us with bugs.
So what's our plan here? We're going to take a couple of weeks off vacation. Is that it? With pay? Is that what I heard?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How much are you making now, Jeffrey, doing this?
he's being
okay,
compensated.
We'll double that for the holiday break.
No, he's being compensated with affection and tequila.
Well, I always am doing that, yeah. There's a few things that get me up in the day. So when will be our next recording?
January. Wednesday, January 7th, the live feed will come back to life.
Yes.
And all of the people in the chat room let out a horrendous scream.
Oh. Like
the voice of a million voices crying out in pain and suddenly silenced.
Well, you could tell them at least it's not a Battlestar Galactica sized break.
This is true.
Yeah, that's right. Which yeah. I just finally saw the semi-finale here where they get to Earth.
The mid-season finale.
Yeah, Babylon 5 will be back in August.
With reruns.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got to rerun like at least 10 shows to get people caught back up. You know,
No. You need 2-minute webisodes.
Ooh, there you go. No,
there'll be 4 2-minute webisodes between now and August to tide you
all
over.
All the wall
puns. And they'll just be Tim, just yammering away. Blah, blah, blah.
It's funny because it's true.
Yeah. So I said to myself, self, what if the Minbari had yellow shirts? If they all just had yellow shirts, how would I feel about that? No more purple, no more green. I'm just going to be yellow from now on.
The yellow movement in the Trossies.
It'll come. The show will return just in time for people to start pestering us. When will the theme change?
Actually, yes, the theme will change 3 weeks after we get back. Actually,
yep.
Because our season 4 is the first week of February.
That's right.
So then we'll be putting the season 4 music in just in time to start season 5.
Five,
no, we have a little ways to go, and we have some potential interviews lined up.
No, the first week in February is 7 years since the beginning of this whole nonsense that I started.
The 7-year anniversary of Dragon Page, cover to cover, and the 4th-year anniversary of this fine.
Mm-hmm.
What's the word I'm looking
4
for?
4 years. Wow.
Yeah. Four years of B5.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's 4 years. What are you talking about?
Hmm?
What? 4 years of B5? What do you mean?
This show.
4 years of Babylon of Podcast.
We'll be kicking off our 4th year.
No way.
Way.
Yeah. Way. I know. It seems like an eternity that's never ended.
My realization today, it's like, holy cow, I've been doing this for 7 years.
Uh-huh. We are winding up 2008 with Babylon Podcast episode number, 140?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
140 episodes.
Ew.
Well, why don't we wrap this thing up so that people want the movie to come back for 141?
We're done.
It's too late.
It's too late for that.
They're done.
Yeah, right.
Yeah,
show's been canceled.
If we haven't driven them off by now, I suppose.
Yeah, if you guys want to continue talking amongst yourselves while we're not creating shows, there's farpointforums.com. You want to send in your own comments. That email address is babylonpodcast@gmail.com. Please donate. Donate to us. Come to the website, babylonpodcast.com. Hit the orange donate button and make Michael happy. Yeah. Or if you want to try to sneak your voicemails in between Gary's repeat calls, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year the end of the year came upon us all. Or something.
Or something. Right. Yeah. We will see you next time on the other side of the gate.
Happy New Year!
Woohoo! Woot!